What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we're with Danny Stevens. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, bro. Kurt, you know Kurt, right?
Yep.
He referred me to you, and this was one of those classic cases of me having no idea that you were in a band that I listened to, like, back in the day. So that was a pretty sweet revelation for me. So if anyone doesn't know, Danny here was in the audition, and really sick, man. It's really a pleasure to talk to you, for real.
Fucking awesome, man. That's cool. I didn't know that you had any idea about that, so that's a shock to me too. So
yeah. It's awesome. Yeah, man, for sure. So I guess let's just start out with what have you been up to lately? Keeping busy playing shows maybe, or in the studio, anything like that?
So I mean, personally, you know, my wife and I, we live just outside of Nashville in Pegram, Tennessee, which is, I mean, we're like right on the border of Davidson County, which is, you know, Nashville. We moved like 6 months back. We were in like the roughest part of Nashville. And it was the day we moved out, dude, there was a, you know, not to get too morbid, but there was a shooting at the, like, in our complex.
Wow.
We get out here and, you know, we're on the hillside with no neighbors. Just, it's so beautiful. It's peaceful. It's serene, dude. It's such like a creative space, you know, that like it's awesome, man. My wife works from home, so it's really helpful for her going from chaos to, like, you know, whew, peace. It's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, man, like, music wise dude, I started working with Sammy Mitchell, who, well, I mean, I guess let's backtrack a little bit, you know.
Yeah, wherever you want to pick up, man.
You know, this is actually my, this month, in a couple of days, actually, marks my 10th year in Nashville. And when, you know, since you already brought the band up, we might as well go into that too, eh?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
But, you know, when the band broke up, we were on the road for, you know, 300 days a year, dude. We were out there for, you know, almost a decade. Took some time off afterwards. Had a vocal surgery.
Okay.
After we had finished touring. I just kind of destroyed my vocal cords, which was unfortunate. It taught me a lot, I guess. But, you know, I took some years off because I just had to, man. Like, touring like that, I'm sure, you know Kurt, and you know people that are in the industry. So it's hard, man. And especially before the internet, you know, it was really hard. You know, before social media, I should say. You know, I was printing out MapQuest directions in binders full of pages, and, you know, God forbid you take the wrong exit, and, you know, a classic Dumb and Dumber scenario happens where you're not even, you know, you're in the wrong spot, bud.
Right. You know? Yeah.
But, you know, all that to say, you know, I moved to Nashville, and for about 5 years I wrote over on Music Row, and I was fortunate enough to get in a room with some really incredible writers here, some true, like, you know, hit makers. And I was able to learn a lot from them. You know, a lot of people that were coming up in that world, so I was able to see what that looked like, and then to also be able to write with more established writers and also see what that was like, you know. So I got here, and I didn't really rely on my past whatsoever, you know. And it was weird because at that time in Nashville, you know, there's been such an emo, if you will, resurgence lately.
Yes.
And I think TikTok has a lot to do with that, really. And I think that's awesome, you know. And
it's
great. I mean, it would have, you know, if TikTok were around when we were doing it, you know, it would have been the biggest thing in the world, you know.
Yeah. So is that what you would classify your band as from back then, emo? Like, is that what you would, if you had to put your guys in a genre, would that be what it is?
I think that nowadays, yes.
Okay.
I think that it's just kind of an all-encompassing word for that music that was almost like, kind of like just like indie music, you know, and not like a sound per se, but, you know, most of the bands that were doing it were not on major labels with huge budgets and these, you know, the bands we were touring with, and you know, there were the cases of those bands, but for the most part, man, it was just, you know, kids running around the country and around the world trying to just figure it out and learn as you went. But I think back then, really, like, everybody had to be different. So, like, I think that categorizes emo, I guess, because if you weren't different, you would get weeded out pretty quickly. And, you know, there weren't a lot of sound-alike bands. You know, there just weren't. You know, you had to be different. You had to bring something different to the table, from your label mates to, you know, the people you were touring with. Like, it had to be in the realm somehow, but it had to be different, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really carried that into my new music, and I wanted to do something that wasn't really following any sort of guideline, but taking all that I've learned from these songwriters and my past, you know, songs and just life in general and experience, and kind of like put that and like make it something that I thought was cool, you know? And I really learned all those lessons, and I kind of hybrided, if that's a word, hybrided those things together, you know?
Yeah. And I, like you said, like, that's a good point when you're talking about standing out in your new, like, your solo endeavors, because in a place like you were talking about, like, the rock emo scene from back then, you want to talk about, like, oversaturation, like, country music now. I mean, it's always going to be this way. It's been like it forever. It's just so oversaturated. Once a sound becomes popular, everyone wants to do that. And that's when it gets hard to stand out, because you want to sound like Zach Bryan. You want to sound like Tyler Childers, that kind of deal. So I guess when you did kind of make that switch, and would you call it country music that you're singing? Like, it's hard to, for me to put a label on it when I first heard it.
Yeah, it is. It's hard, man. I
that's a good thing, though.
it is and it isn't, you know, because it's hard to find. It's hard to, like, when you're marketing and you're trying to spread awareness and you want to be targeted, it can be difficult, you know, because when I'm, like, building ads and you know, for paid traffic to like, promote something, it's hard to target that shit, because I don't really know. You know, country music is the – I like to say that it's, like, it's rooted in country music with, like, the sounds and the storytelling of the songs, but it's kind of all of my influences in every song, and I'm just kind of, like, pulling different levers and, like, throttling some in some songs and, like, throttling back on some, you know, like, just of everything that I love. And I think it, you know, if I could really, you know, boil it down, I guess it would be, like, contemporary country music, if that would be a term, you know, because I don't fit with a lot of country. There's, like, a line where I don't fit on either side, you know. And I'm not going to fit in with the Zach Tops and the Jason Aldeans and the Zach Browns. Maybe him, but, like, you know, I'm going to fit in with Dan and Shay, or, you know, like, an Old Dominion, or even, like, an Imagine Dragons, or One Republic, you know, those types of acts. But it's hard to, like, I don't know, it's hard to nail it down. It's because it's not like any of that, you know? So I don't know, man. What do you think?
I know that's what, like, because when I first heard it, like, I was thinking, like, since from your background in your early days, like, doing a completely other style of music, it's just like you're right. It is hard to put it in. And yeah, when it comes to the marketing and that kind of stuff, and when you actually have to put it in a genre, I get how that's hard. But, like, that's what attracts fans like me, at least. I could just talk about myself, because, like, when it's something different, when it's something you can't nail down to a certain spot, to a certain subgenre or whatever, that just shows, like, I think that shows what an artist is worth, I guess. The talent that they actually have, if they can progress and do some weird shit, you know, some different stuff, like, for this song to that song. I feel like that shows how an artist is, more than just, like, because you got the, I'm just kind of rambling now, but you got, like, the bands. Yeah, you got bands, like, who could absolutely nail a formula. Like AC/DC is the first one that comes to mind. They have been playing the same shit forever, and it kills every time. And it's like, but like, I feel like you really have to be able to own that. So I feel like the smart route would be for artists, like up and coming artists, at least to like try some weird shit. Don't get caught up in the fad, I guess. I don't know. I know obviously that's just like a music fan standpoint. I know there's like business shit. Like, well, this makes money. We got to do that. I don't know that part. But right. That's my thoughts on the situation. I don't know.
I think your point on country music.
Yeah.
It is built. It's kind of built on carbon copies, you know, and because it had a formula for a very long time that worked.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, it was this kind of like echo chamber, and it kind of still is this echo chamber of like money, really. Yep. And when Nashville kind of figures out something that works, you know, if I kind of like equate it to this, if whatever label Morgan Wallen is on, let's say, you know, he can only put out 2 albums a year, but people want more. So if they sign 3 other Morgan Wallens, well, that's, you know, 6 more Morgan Wallen albums they can put out a year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it makes sense for a business to put that out. And you know, every carbon copy that's released kind of waters down and until you get, you know, down to where it's just like nothing anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And it really takes something different. Or something like blinded from the past,
yeah,
to like break through,
yeah.
And but it might not,
mm-hmm.
You know, it very well might not. But you know, personally, I would rather do what I feel is true to me,
yeah,
than to try to be something else, because
yep.
I've done that and it doesn't work,
right?
It works 0% of the time, and you know, these people that do that are these carbon copies, they may be seeing success right now, but you and I, we don't know what their contracts look like.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Right.
We have no idea what their, you know, their money situation looks like. And, you know, music industry contracts are like predatory by nature. So mm-hmm. We have no idea. And especially if you don't have any experience and you are very easily distracted by shiny things.
Yeah.
You can really put yourself in a bad situation. I know that because, you know, I signed a really bad record deal when I was 18. Mm-hmm. So I know, and, you know, we got, you know, everything stolen from us.
Okay.
So I couldn't imagine if it went on some huge scale, you know, where it was just like, where it really made a difference, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of that is kind of what we see and why it's so easily churnable.
Mm-hmm.
And why, you know, we kind of have these song camps and that kind of churn out these similar sounding songs because it's a machine and it works.
Yep. Yeah.
More power to them. Hey,
yeah.
They figured out something that works and I was a part of it and it was awesome to see how that worked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just like, it made my knowledge stronger. I'm like kind of, you know, a lot of almost like what I don't want to do in a sense and how I would, you know, you learn more from what you don't want to do or what you shouldn't do or what you shouldn't have done than
yeah.
You do from, you know, anything else. So it was a huge learning experience for me doing all that. But I got to see like the inner workings of it. And, you know, it's when a big business is scrambling to meet their bottom line, they'll fucking do anything, you know? So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. And like you having, you know, been in the business for longer than a lot of these other guys coming up, like, the thing that I see, and it kind of just clicked with me recently, is that these like the power of TikTok and Instagram, and like if someone pops off and goes viral, and like they've never played a show or anything, they just go viral on a song playing in their living room or whatever. Like if they go viral and like they hop into like something that they don't know about, like they get thrown up on like a festival stage and they haven't even played a show yet, or they have to sign a few papers that they don't. Like basically what you said, they don't have like experience with that. It just seems, it's great if it makes them successful, but I feel like they're not going to be in the game long. It's going to like kind of tear them apart in a way. I feel like that you might see that happen in the coming years with all these artists who are blowing up on like social media and everything. I feel like it's not like the healthiest way to go about it, and probably just like going the old fashioned way of just like grinding, cutting your teeth, like, you know, from the bottom up. I feel like you have to do that. You have to road dog it. You have to live it instead of like skipping right to the part where you're successful, which I just kind of noticed that recently, like with the power of social media and stuff.
I think you nailed it, man. I think, I think that if you don't have, if you don't know what to do, how could you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and you can't blame them.
You can't blame them, and, and you can't even blame the system because it's so like, well, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Buy into it. So who's to blame, you know? Yeah. And I can see it, man. I can see when I'm like scrolling social media and I see young artists and they're really getting, you know, steam on social media. And then I see them play a festival, as you mentioned. And
yeah,
I'm just like, wow, this is not good. You know? And it's just objectively not, it's not done well.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell somebody that's been doing it for 10 years or 5 years or, you do have to road dog it in a sense, but you can do both at the same time. You know,
sure,
you can grow with your audience as you're doing the road gigs, but like, you know, you need to be comfortable up there. You need to have your own kind of style with in the way you present yourself with your music. It needs to match, you know, in my opinion, like the way you move has to match the mood of your music and the way it moves. And the only way to do that is to do it a lot, you know, and to really like, focus on that. I think that is really a lost art, but you know, that's just the new one hit wonder, you know, it's just the new version of that because that person went viral, but they didn't have the foundation to reap the benefits.
Yeah.
Because they were misguided or they had no guidance at all.
Right.
So, or they were just uninformed and that can happen too, you know, but if you have all the proper pieces in place and you take your time, and you care and you're smart and then you go viral, the foundation is built and you can reap all the benefits.
Right.
And you'll know what to do and you'll know how to leverage that in your career with, you know, a record label or a booking agent or anyone that you want to work with because you're bringing something that's mutually beneficial to the table.
Yeah.
It's not about giving a percentage away. It's about working with somebody to make money. That's the end of the day. When the art is done, the work starts, you know? Yeah. So as an artist these days, you can't just be one thing. You have to be multifaceted. You have to be good at it.
Like,
you have to care about it. You know, you have to learn how to market yourself. You have to learn how to do social media and, you know, and put money into it and lose money and figure it out for yourself because that's what it is now. And if you don't want to do that, that's okay. But that's what it requires now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was very against TikTok and all this shit, but then.
Because you like went through it. Like, yeah, like you went through it too. Like you didn't just start with TikTok already like happening and popping off. Like you were, when you started, like, you know what I mean? Like none of that shit was even a thing yet. So you got to like kind of witness it grow. So maybe do you think that like helped you a bit when you transferred into your solo career? Like just being able to kind of see it, how it's like came up and everything, or was it just as much a mystery as it is to everyone else?
Such a mystery. Because I had gotten off social media for years and I wasn't active. You know, I posted, yeah, but I felt like it was because I had to for some reason, you know, not because like I wanted to. And it, you know, so I didn't use it for, you know, my music because, you know, like I was saying before, when I first moved to Nashville, like telling these people that I was working with that I was in like an emo band was not a flex. It was not a good thing. So
right.
I actually, for the first 5 years I was here, tried to really distance myself from that title. And man, I was going to go by a different name and shit. Dude, I didn't know because I had always wanted to do this. You know, I found a bunch of country songs that I'd written when I was in a band a few weeks ago that are just like these acoustic demos that I wrote, you know, in like 2007 for like my future country project. Because like I grew up on it, man. I love it. And it was it's I'm going off on a tangent.
You're good.
But I don't even know what the point was.
No, I rambled, dude. You're fine. That's what I do too. But like that leads me into another question, I guess. So like I was going to ask you before about it sounds like you were always into the country music, right?
Yeah.
So like I'm going to try and word this so it makes sense. My words get jumbled up a lot. But so being a country fan growing up and like always being a fan of it, going the emo route, was that something like that was just as important to you, or was that like something that like oh, emo music's popping off, let's do emo music, like, or was it like something you actually like really wanted to do? Does that make any sense?
No, I hear you. Yeah, it's something I really wanted to do.
Okay.
Because it was the first music that I discovered on my own.
Mm.
When I first heard Newfound Glory, like, dude, it changed my life.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my god, you can do that. Like, oh my god. And I heard the starting line. I had like demos of theirs from their first, like songs that weren't even released. I don't even know how I had on like a mini disc player.
Yeah.
That I walked around my halls in high school and listened to, and MXPFs and Saves the Day.
Mm.
You know, it went into like Blink-182, and I loved Alkaline Trio. And dude, it was fucking awesome, man. I got to tour with all those guys.
Like, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm thinking to myself walking around high school and wanting so badly to like be a part of that, whatever that was. I didn't really know what that was, but like it made me feel something, and it was cool, you know. But like country music was, you know, like the first thing that I was ever like kind of ever experienced. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my grandfather loved Merle Haggard and Conway Twitty. I have a Conway Twitty shout out on one of the songs coming out, actually.
Oh, nice.
Coming up. But, you know, and he loved all that. You love Johnny Cash. I got to take him to the Johnny Cash Museum before he passed, which was an awesome thing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, my parents loved all the 90s country, you know, Shania and Aaron Tippin and Mark Chestnut and early Toby Keith. And, you know, you can go down the list of all that stuff. But, you know, I was probably like 13 and I heard, I think it was at the funeral by Saves the Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, what is this? What is this? And it just sent me down a rabbit hole. And I have a tendency to like hyper focus on things that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
I've got like 100 hobbies, you know, but I actively do them, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first things that I'd ever found for myself that I was just like, yeah, this is so cool. And I remember early internet days when I was sitting on the computer, like trying to dig the internet for Newfound Glory footage or Newfound Glory pictures or merch or something to get my hands on it. And, you know, to bring it kind of to today, I think the reason that I'm not so anti, you hear so many artists that are so anti social media, and I'm not. I think it's awesome. I think it's hard, and I think it can be emotionally draining.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I was touring, in order for me to talk to somebody that, you know, quote unquote, loved my music, they had to come to a show, and I had to like run into them at the merch table. Dude, now somebody can just DM me and I can say right away, oh my God, thank you so much. Like that's, what?
Yeah.
It's awesome. Right. That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, why wouldn't I want to give more content to those people and like better content and like more well thought out stuff and, you know, bring them kind of in deeper to what I'm doing. You know, that's how you make a fan. It's not just somebody that like streams your song or like, you know, watches your video to get a view. It's somebody that like cares, you know, and cares like I care, you know, in the way that I care about it. So, and it may not be, you know, millions of people, but that doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't need to be that for it to be worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Do you ever, so like every era in the music, like has like its popular point, its heyday, its peak, like new metal has it. They were big in their time period. Then you had
coming back.
Yes. Thank God.
In a big way, dude, like as big as it was, or even not, maybe not bigger.
Yeah, but I'm loving it. And
me too.
But like you had like the hair metal. That was big in the 80s. And then emo, I feel like, had that too. Like it was a movement kind of deal. It was like a thing, like in music, in time. Does that ever like cross your mind? Like, to me, that'd be crazy. Like, I was a part of that. And like, that's going to be like forever, like cemented in time. You know what I mean? Like, does that ever like come up, or am I thinking too much into it?
No, I think that, I think like what you're asking is like, what was it like to be on the other side of it?
Yeah.
And when it was happening, it felt like, yeah, this is special. Something's going on. Mm-hmm. Do I think about it now?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really see it like you see it. You know, mm-hmm. it's not that it's better or worse. It's just different, you know? So I kind of have always had this, as they say, imposter syndrome. So it's hard for me to accept it maybe, but I think that I can objectively see it. But it's a hard thing to kind of like
to grasp,
because it's first of all, it was so long ago, and like it hasn't been active in my life for so long.
Yeah.
So it almost feels like a movie that I've seen a million times and know really, really well, but I haven't seen in years.
Yeah.
So it's like these moments that I can like recall, and they might not even be accurate, you know, because like, you know, our minds and our brains, they don't retain information forever, you know, and things change, and, you know, you ask somebody else about the situation, it's different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, but like my experience, it just feels like something that was like somebody else. It feels like somebody else.
Like a whole nother lifetime.
I'm a different person now, man. Like I've been sober for coming on 7 years. I haven't had alcohol in 7 years. Thank you. And you know, it was a decision I had to make because I was fucked up, dude.
Yeah.
I was fucked up. And it was not a good look, and it was not cool, you know?
Yeah.
And because it was cool, you know, it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you start thinking, man, this isn't fun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of necessity and not anything else, really. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, when I quit that, I had to like really buckle down and like, I went to therapy, you know, and I had to like excommunicate myself from everybody here in Nashville, because realized quickly that I didn't really have a lot of friends. I had a lot of drinking buddies.
Mm.
That was really hard for me to grapple with, because that was my network, right? I'm trying to put music on.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like isolating myself. You know, it hurt. But, like, it like fucked me up, because it's like, well, I mean, I could go and do this, and I could do it how I did it. But it's like, no, dude, no. Just trust yourself and just do what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like those things are hard to grapple with. So like my past in that regard, and like the movement that I was a part of, and to like, it's just fucking weird, dude.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah.
You know,
no, I get what you mean.
I wish, I say this, I wish that we had TikTok.
Yeah.
That's what people wanted, you know, but we couldn't give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
We would have, you know, and that would have made a lot of difference. So,
right.
Bands that don't want to do that shit now, it's like, you're lucky you have it.
Yeah.
Quite frankly. Because you don't have to tour. You can build a fan base without touring.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. You don't even have to, like, play music. You could do, like, other shit, too, which is another thing. Like, but, and thanks for answering that, man. And I was also wondering, like, when you did, we're going to talk more about your solo stuff. So I don't want to just talk about the past and everything, but. When you did start to do more of the country centric stuff, did your approach creatively, like whether like writing or just the whole process of creating a song, did it change at all from when you were like doing more like the rock emo stuff, or like obviously you grew, so like you matured and everything, so your songwriting naturally will mature, but did you find it any kind of different approach you took to the creative process?
It evolved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think too much when I'm writing.
Okay.
I kind of just let it happen. And I don't really force it. And that's kind of how we always approach it as a band. It was get in a room and just whatever comes out is what we do. That's it. We don't write a million songs. We don't, you know, every song we wrote ended up on an album. We have no more songs. That's it. There's one song that we didn't put out because you want to know why? Because it was too country.
Oh, really?
the band didn't want to put on the record. It was our third record in 2008, self-titled. We didn't end up putting it on the record because it was too country. but I don't think the writing for me has always been, writing lyrics for me has always been really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I love writing melody and I love singing harmonies. I love finding chords and melodies that work together. But writing something that like means something to me and that is like also real has always been kind of hard for me, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, like my wife, you know, I have this new music and it's not about any person in particular. It's just about like experiences that I've had and like kind of thinking like, what the fuck is wrong with me? You know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, my wife hears me singing these songs and I like, you know, because I'm experienced, like I can give like that emotion, like I'm in it, like I'm living it right now. And then she's just like, dude.
disclaimer.
Like, how do you do that? Like, what is going on? Like, you don't really feel that. I'm like, no. I'm just singing the song. Like, I have to like match the emotion of the lyric, you know?
Yeah. I'm only a vessel.
Right. But, you know, the stories are all real feelings mm-hmm. and like things that I have felt, you know?
Yeah.
But like, it's kind of just like a collection of being able to harness those and like recall that and letting that feeling sit with you for a minute and kind of just like let it flow through you. And writing songs I remember writing my first song. I really mm-hmm. do. It was called Why Do All the Dreams Come to an End? Yeah, I've been emo since the jump, dude.
Yeah, man.
I was 13. I wrote it with my best friend in my basement on my Washburn electric guitar, which I still have, by the way, in the closet.
Oh, sweet.
And you know, it was like the saddest song ever. It wasn't real. You know, like it was things that I maybe had felt, but I think that is really what has changed for me is like being able to just not talk about something, but like talk about the way it makes me feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that is the most relatable music. I think the lyrics in the audition were, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, dude. I was just writing. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's what people necessarily connected to. I think mm-hmm. it was the feeling that it gave them, whatever that was.
Yeah.
And I think that I tried to incorporate that in the new music with a little bit more thought into the lyric.
Mm-hmm.
And making it a little bit more interesting, but also making it more simple.
Yeah.
And I really focused on, you know, when I was in the studio, my producer Sammy and I, we focused on making songs that were palatable for the average listener that would still strike their attention
and make them
and
feel
kind of pique their ear. And because if you can get somebody to go, ooh, what is that? Like, you mm-hmm. got them. You know, so. It's like social media, 3-second rule, right? Like get them in 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can do that with a song, like great, you know, we focused on giving the average listener a cool experience, but we also gave credit to people that wanted to dig deeper into the music and like listen on nice headphones or through speakers and give them things that are happening all around that every time you listen, it's a new experience, but it feels the same. It's nostalgic, but it's new. And that's kind of like what the music feels like to me really is it's like modern nostalgia almost mm-hmm. in like rooted in country music. But, you know, say that 10 times fast and try to explain that to somebody as your elevator pitch, you know, trying to score a record deal.
But I mean, what you just explained there is something that I've been trying to explain but I'm not a wordsmith like you are. So I was just like, that's how I am. When I listen to music, and it's kind of tough with most of the musicians I talk to being country musicians, is that 95% of the time they say the most important thing to them during the creative process is the lyrics, the songwriting, like pen to paper. And I've always been a rock guy to begin with. So it's like, to be honest, the lyrics are usually like the last thing I pay attention to. I listen to the sonic feeling of it, the guitars, the feeling, like you said. And what you just explained is exactly what I try to convey to them. It's like the lyrics matter, but like, I think what really matters is like what keeps you there. At the end of the day, lyrics are just a poem, right? Like it could just be like a poem, but the everything else added onto that, I think, is the most important part. Kind of like how what you said, like it was just kind of funny because like the aspect to it that wasn't your favorite to do was the lyric part, which is kind of funny. I don't hear that much.
Yeah, music is so multifaceted, you know, mm-hmm. to use that word again. Because you can be great at, you can be a virtuoso guitar player. You know, imagine if John Mayer wrote bad lyrics. Like, it wouldn't be the same. Yeah. Or, you know, you can be great at something and not be great at the other. But but the people that are great at all of it are the ones that eventually are able to, like, break through. And that comes through easier for some than it does for others. And my question to you would be, if you've talked to so many country guys and gals that say the most important thing is the lyric, then why the fuck is everything about the same shit?
Yep. Yeah. Hey, man. You're saying the quiet part out loud, bro.
No shade, man. I get it.
I know.
That's kind of like an egregious thing to say. I'm not discrediting all country music, but I would imagine that, you know, a lot of the people that you, like you even said yourself, you know, Nashville people have a tendency to get caught up in that machine we were talking about earlier. Yeah. And, you know, you flash a little bit of money at somebody for an advance, like, what are you really giving away? And then, then you have to defend it. Like, you're not going to admit that you fucked up, right? Yeah. So you're going to defend your decision, and you're going to double down if something does well for you. So why wouldn't you do it? Right. That's kind of what they sell you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
But it is. And that's okay. And like I said before, it takes something different and like bold to break through. And I'm not talking like better than something else, but like, look at Florida Georgia Line. That was bold. That was a bold move, you know, and they were unapologetic and they just did what they did. And it caught on like wildfire.
Yep.
So, you know, be Florida Georgia Line.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be that. You know, like, don't carbon copy. We already have, carbon copies, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not trying to throw shade at anybody. I'm just poking fun. But, like, but, you know, how many ads do you get on Instagram where, like, all right, this looks good or whatever, and the first fucking thing is about whiskey or trucks or whatever the buzzwords are.
Yeah.
And I guess it works for some of them, but to me, it's like you're trying to play catch up in a game that has already started.
Yeah. So and it don't stop. It don't stop either.
Right. It's not stopping for you. You know, make your own game, make your own rules. You know, why not?
Yeah. And that's where the whole oversaturation thing comes in for me. Like, and it's not only Nashville, it is a lot of Nashville, I think, but like the Texas scene out there, like when rock really hit out in Texas, you got guys like Co Wetzel and all them really start getting into it. Like there was some, got a little, you know, oversaturated, it's like the same stuff. It's not really anything, I don't know, mind boggling is not a good word for it, but anything different. And and that could really, like, I feel like for the artists too, like that could be really bad for their, like, thought process, their career, like, because they're just gonna get down on, they're not gonna know what to do. Maybe do you find that do you see that a lot, like in the with your peers, like if they just can't figure it out, like has it gotten so bad they get so frustrated that they just want to like just give up? Like I don't, it just seems like such a like a bummer. It's something that you try so hard to do, never works.
Dude, you're preaching, man. I mean, I quite honestly, dude, I think that we all feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of us. And I think those that continue, you know, such as myself, like, I'm fucking crazy doing this. What am I doing? Right? Like, what am I doing? Seriously. Yeah. But something, I can't give up. You just, something about it just won't let me give up. And it's not like the washed up, you know, 80s metal guy that you see at Guitar Center. It's like,
yeah,
it's not that, you know, yeah. It's something that I want to stay relevant, but not, I'm not desperate. You know, yeah. Desperation stinks, dude. You can smell it from a mile away. And like, I want to make genuine connections and I want to do it the right way and not say yes to everything, because I did before and it never worked out, man. It just, people learn that they can take advantage of you when you say yes all the time. And yeah. They do, you know, but you know, I something about it just keeps me in it. And It's just fun, dude. I don't know. It's just cool.
Like, yeah. It's what you want to do.
Right. And like, especially when you know you're capable of it and You think that you're, you know, I feel like personally, like I'm better than I've ever been. You know, I feel more confident than I've ever been. I feel like my songs are better than they've ever been. And I'm not trying to, like, you know, stroke my ego by any means, but like, I've worked hard on it. So like, I should feel that way. You know, athletes know when they're doing better, like they know. Mm-hmm. And they have stats to help them, but like they also feel it. Like you can tell, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same for musicians. And I think a lot of people chase that feeling of improving, because it's like a drug, dude. It's like when you get a little bit, like it's just like, damn, like that was when you do something that people really connect to. It's like, damn, that is cool. So like, get better at that. You know, kind of what I was saying before about how I have 100 hobbies. Like, I like to like figure things out, And I like to get good at them because it's fun. You know, one of my main hobbies, I got a big fingerboard park behind me. Like that's like my hobby, dude. And we all know skateboarding is hard as hell. Well, I mean, it's the same physics as skateboarding. It's just with your hand, you know? Right. So it's fucking hard and there's no end to create the creativity. You can't master it and you can only get better. And that's the type of shit that I like. And that's music really summed up, you know, unless you're some anomaly, like, Or having somebody do everything for you. You know, there's always room for improvement. And I mean, probably growing up playing, you know, hockey probably instilled that in me, you know, like You can always incrementally getting better is way better than like, you know, having a great game every 4 games, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know.
No, that made sense. And by fingerboard, you mean like tech decks? It's like those old things? No shit, dude. I haven't even like thought about those for like 10 years. Dude,
so I have one right here.
Yeah. Oh man.
So they're made out of wood now and they're like real skateboards. It's like 5 plies of pressed wood. The trucks are real. Like the bushings respond. The wheels are real skateboard wheels. Like they squeak and everything. Oh yeah, dude. I got that behind me is a huge like park that I have like a bunch of shit set up on. Yeah. So I'm in a fingerboard crew in Nashville. There's like a bunch of us that like meet up and sesh together. It's like a huge thing. It's like an underground, you know, subcategory of skateboarding. You know, they just opened, there's a company called Black River that just opened their first American brick and mortar in Chicago, like right downtown. TikTok is what helped it explode.
Okay.
It's a huge thing again, dude. Like, tech back into toy stores in this toy section. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I've done it since I was a kid, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. It's awesome to see it, you know, to use it for lack of a better word. It's going off, dude. My zen zone, dude. I stand there and I'm able to get into a flow state.
It's like meditation.
It's meditation. It really is. Yeah. And, you know, as they say, bless my wife, because it's not a quiet hobby by any means. And it's not necessarily cheap either, man. Like, you know, this setup here is like, it's like $160 for this fucking thing.
Is
like
it
all,
really?
Yeah, because all the parts come from different places, and when it comes down to like shipping and all of it, like they're expensive, you know. Yeah. But you know, I'm out of my spending phase with it, which is good.
Yeah. Awesome.
Good on that.
Hell yeah, man. Let's talk a bit about your newest single that just came out in October, by the way. So. I guess we start out, is there a certain story behind it that you'd like to share, or any kind of message you have with it?
Yeah, I think there's a cool story behind this. So I'm gonna start a little bit before the song was made, and the audition got back together in 2018, and we did Slam Dunk Festival in the UK, and then we were offered Riot Fest in Chicago that same year, a few months later, and we had done four or five shows. I think we did a club show as well, but we did four or five shows in total, and I had gotten home, and this was June, and CMA mm-hmm. Fest was happening in Chicago, or I'm sorry, in Nashville. And a friend of mine invited me to go, and we were like right up close, dude. We were like fourth row back. I mean, we were super close, man. I could see him sweating. You know what I mean? In a big yeah. stadium. And yeah. I'm standing there, and I'm watching Brett Eldridge, and he's just up there singing with the mic on the stand. And I'm like getting aggravated. I'm like, man, you are wasting this opportunity, dude. You're just standing there. What are you doing? Please move yeah. around. Please do something. And then I forget who played next, and then Dierks Bentley came up, and that was awesome. And Florida Georgia Line came up, and that was awesome. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, dude, you can do that. Mm-hmm. Like you can do that. You just did it. Like, just do it. Do that. Yeah. And I woke up the next day, and I called. The first person I called was my producer. And I was like, hey man, I have this idea. I want to. I don't know if we had songs written yet, but I think we may have. But regardless, you know, I called him and I was like, hey, I have this idea. I want to do like a 4-song project and just, so I haven't done songs in a long time and I want to do that. And he was totally on board. So we kind of devised a plan. We reached out to a bunch of people. But the way that I had met him was through a co-write. So yeah, it was before that because I had met him for the first time through a co-write of a friend of mine named Derek Holquist, who used to write over at Carnival. Or maybe he still does. But he had brought me in on as a fourth person on the right, which is absolutely insanity.
Yeah.
Thinking back on it. But because somebody had canceled on him. So he brought mm-hmm. me, because we had been writing together, we were friends. And he brought me in with this guy named Luke Preston and Sammy Mitchell, who ended up being my producer. Mm-hmm. And I sit down and I see it every time I buy poster next to this council, and I'm just used to country dudes that like only want to talk about country music and like what's hot on the charts. And
yeah,
and I'm like, what a welcome breath of fresh air. I was like, dude, you like Every Time I Die? You know, I know those guys in the day. We toured together on Warped Tour, and I just thought that was cool. He's like, yeah. Bro, they're my favorite band. And I was like, okay. And then I go, hey, can I smoke weed in here? And he's like, oh yeah, for sure.
A natural second question.
I like,
yeah.
I was like, yeah, right. I was like, we just unlocked another level.
Yeah.
You know, we beat the first level. Yeah. And so we wrote, actually the first time we wrote together, man, we came out with that song, my first single, Moved On Without You.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he had produced that just that work tape, he had gone like an extra mile, and he had taken just like the acoustic work tape on the phone, and he had dumped it into Logic, and he like kind of like made a very simple drum beat behind it, but that gave that song feeling, and it changed it. And I thought that was so fucking cool. I was like, dude, no one has done that. I've written hundreds of songs at this point in this town, and no one has done that. And I thought that was awesome. Just that little tweak was just awesome. So we wrote together a second time, and that was actually when we wrote By the Way. And that was a hard one to write. It was lyrically, and like figuring out phrasing and not having phrases or words sound rushed or mm-hmm. lagging was a really tough task. And we wrote it. It was the same four, me, Luke, Derek, and Sammy. We had written the song, and Sammy and I liked it, but it wasn't right. So mm-hmm. he and I actually sat down and we like kind of restructured it, and we redid the whole first verse, and I actually found the demo for the old version. And I'm listening to it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad that we changed that because it made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of reworked it and really like banged our heads on this one. And it came out fucking awesome. I think it's like my favorite, maybe on the record. Like it encompasses everything that I'm going for, kind of.
Yeah, it's killer, man. I love it.
It's different. It's new. It's vocal. It's old and it's new and it's like dark and it's, mm-hmm. but it's hopeful. And I don't know. It's just, it just encompasses like kind of where, like what the sound I want to go for, I guess. Yeah. yeah, writing that was tough, man. But we got through it. And we did it. And you know, sometimes you just sometimes it just takes a little longer. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, man, like it was a killer song. Excuse me. It was a killer song. I was very like, I didn't know what to expect when Kurt recommended it to me, but like it's Kurt we're talking about. He knows what he's thinking. So I was like, yeah, and sure as shit, man. Like I was very impressed. So going off that a bit, like what do we have cooking? Like anything else coming up that you want to share or anything like that?
Did you also know that Kurt shot all the photos for my
Yes, he told me that too. Yeah.
Dude, and did he tell him, did he tell you how we did it?
No.
So we did it on all expired film from the 35 millimeter film from like 1997.
Wow.
And we used old cameras that were older than that.
Mm-hmm.
To he had posted something on his Instagram, just like a picture of a cottage. Mm-hmm. And it caught my eye and I messaged him and we had never worked together. And I go, and I kind of like gave my elevator pitch, as I said, and was like, hey, man, here's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I want that look, whatever that look is, I want that. The way that feels and resonates with me, whatever that is, I want to do that. And that was his process of that shoot was the expired film. It was actually even to go a little deeper than that. Few of the shots were the first like piece of, you know, shot on the film. Mm-hmm. And they were half exposed. So there's this like flame that is going, and the next single actually has this on it. It has this like flame color going down the middle that like cut off because it was exposed for years. And the artist that did the album artwork that used those photos, he pulled the colors for the album from that flame.
Okay.
And he used that as like the primary colors for the artwork, which I thought was cool. I thought that was an awesome touch.
That's,
you know?
Yeah.
And like that stuff, dude, that's so different. That's so like what a cool thing for that guy to do.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Like that's what I want to work with people like that, you know, like,
yeah.
And Kurt that had had that idea to shoot that. And I'm like, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What a cool thing. But you know, back to your question, what do I have cooking up? You know, I'm hitting the road, at the end of the month on next weekend. Jeez, already 22nd through the 24th. I'm going out with my buddy Stephen Carey, who is an independent music artist here. He's on tour. He's on the road with Lily Rose. It's really dope. It's definitely been killer, it looks like. I'm going out with him. We're going out with Ian Christian, who is a songwriter over at Seagale, who writes for works with Megan Maroney and Ella Langley and Jordan Fletcher and a lot of the up and comers in town. And his wife, who goes by Reader, who I haven't met yet, but I checked out her stuff and it's cool, man. She's good. So we're hitting Chattanooga on the 22nd at a place called Dragon Roast. We're hitting the next day, the 23rd, in Tifton, Georgia, at this like really dope photography studio called Daniel Shippey's Photography Studio. And then we're hitting Jacksonville on the 24th, and we're playing Jackrabbits live, which I am super excited about because that was a venue that we played a lot in the audition, and I haven't been back in a long time, and I couldn't be more excited. I'm almost shocked that it's still open, but hey, I'm so stoked to get back there and see that place again, man, because you know we had some wild shows there, and it was, you know, it's going to bring back some cool memories, so you know. We'll get together after and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. But Danny, dude, thanks a lot. This was a lot of fun talking. This is one of those interviews that I knew like 5 minutes in, like, all right, this is going to be an easy one. Some of them are like pulling teeth. You know how it is. But I love it, man. Thanks a lot for hopping on. Everyone, make sure to check him out. Also, do you have any socials, any plugs you want to throw out too?
Search me out. I'm on every single streaming. Listen, anywhere that you can find somebody on the internet, you know, my music is there. So TikTok, Instagram, verified everywhere. So just search my name, Danny Stevens, Apple Music, stuff, whatever, dude, you get it. I'm out there. You know, you got to be. If you ain't out there, you're doing it wrong, dudes.
That's so right. No excuses.
Get yourselves out there, dude. Be grateful that we were able to, you know.
Absolutely. So Danny, thanks a lot for hopping on. Everyone, make sure to listen to, check him out. And then also check out Rage Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the platforms. We're everywhere. So, yeah, thanks a lot, Dan, for hopping on. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, dude. Thanks, Kurt.
My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight? Try.